my favorite clips, and I put them all together, I edited them so they're all right in a row, my favorite clips from the movie The Princess Bride as a way of setting up the sermon today. Oh, you got to go back to the, yeah, we got.
We'll reach the cliffs by dawn. Why are you doing that?
Making sure nobody's follow us.
That would be inconceivable.
Despite.
Stop doing that. We can all relax. It's almost over.
Not sure nobody's follow us.
As I told you, it would be absolutely, totally, and in all other ways, inconceivable. No one in Gilder knows what we've done. And no one in Florin could have gotten here so fast.
He's climbing the rope. And he's gaining on us.
Inconceivable. Inconceivable!
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
He says, you keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. You know, inconceivable means something else because obviously it's conceivable. It's happening. And so that's a cute, funny little clip. But I think about that, and that's actually become a meme for a lot of things that people say. You know, because people will say things and or use a word in a context or overuse a word where we want to, like, stand up sometimes and shake people and say, look, you keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. And so I'm going to give you a couple of examples of this, actually three examples of this, of how, you know, sometimes in our language people use a word and I don't think that they really, truly... Okay, this is Chris Traeger from Parks and Rec, and he's very famous for saying literally. Do you have friends who say literally at times when it's not literally? I had a friend the other day, and he said to me, oh, have you heard such and such album? It literally blew my mind. And I said, no, it didn't. It did not literally blow your mind. Yeah, but you'll hear people say literally when they mean figuratively or something else, literally. And here's the other one, and I'm guilty of overusing this word, but I really became convicted of it the other day when I went out to a restaurant, and it's this word, awesome, awesome. So I go with a friend to a restaurant, and the waitress comes up, and she says, how are y'all doing today? And we said, oh, we're doing all right. And she said, awesome. And then she said, well, you know, would y'all like something to drink? And my friend said, well, I think I'll have some water. And she said, awesome. And then I said, well, I think I'll have a Diet Coke. And she said, awesome. And then she came back in a little while and she told us what the today's specials were. And we said, no, we think we're just going to order off the menu. And she said, awesome. And then, you know, just continued on. Everything was awesome. And despite the Lego character, not everything is awesome, right? We tend to, you know, I mean, awesome should be like reserved for like really, really great things. But it's awesome, you know, it's just sort of like, all right. So that's the second one I thought about. Now, this third one I want you to think about with me because it is one of those words, one of the terms, that's very important to me and I know is important to you. That there are many people that I just want to say, you keep using that word, I don't think it means what you think it means. And it's this word, Christian. Christian. You thought about that? Do you know people, you know, that the word Christian can mean so many things and has come to mean so many things nowadays and throughout history. I mean, there have been wars that were fought because of Christians. You know, there have been all sorts of atrocities committed by Christian people. We had segregation and prejudice and all because of people who claim to be and Christians. Today, you know, if you watch the news or watch TV, you'll see pastors who are getting, you know, asking for $15 million jets. Okay, they're Christian. There's, you know, there's some people in a group of our culture will say that Christians all vote this way. This is the Christian vote, and so it becomes not just something that should identify us by our faith and our belief in Jesus Christ, but it comes about like what politics you identify, because they're Christian. And so, you know, as we have lived history as a movement now, this Jesus follower movement, it occurs to me that we have not done a really good job at times with exemplifying what that word means. You know, if we were to Google the definition of Christian, we would, you know, there. How many does it say? I can't say. 545 million results for the word Christian. If we were, if I were to arrange you in groups of 10 and gave you a piece of paper and ask you to write your definition of Christian, I'm guessing that we would not all get the same answer, right? We might get some same answers, but they're probably, in a group of 10, there are probably five different responses. How do you define that word? What is a Christian? And, you know, there's a cases where I look out and I say, you keep using that word. I don't think you know what it means. It's like someone asking you, are you a Christian? It occurred to me the other day, and stay with me. I don't know if you've ever bought anything on Craigslist, but if you've ever bought or sold something from Craigslist, when you have that initial conversation with the person on the other end, whether they're buying or selling, there's this like little dance that you ask these questions just to make sure that the other one is not a serial killer, right? And so someone to ask me, are you a Christian? You kind of ask questions, well, yes, of course I'm a Christian, but what do you mean by that? Because I'm not like this. I'm not like this group of folks there. I'm not one of those Christians, but I am a Christian. Can you identify that today? It becomes very hard to define what a Christian is. And as we look at various pollers like Gallup, like Barna Research, the Pew Research, I mean, we're finding more and more of people that have, you know, sort of turned their, you know, mind away from Christians and Christianity because of the witness that some of the people that keep using that name have had. And so, just in a general sense, I want to give you a large definition of the way that a lot of people in our world, particularly in our country, particularly younger people, what they think about when they hear the word Christian. And it's this, that Christian is a judgmental, homophobic moralist who believe they are the only ones going to heaven and secretly relish the fact that everyone else is going to hell. Right? And you know, and like if we hear that, some of us might say, well, that's part of it, but you got to understand that's not what I mean when I say I'm a Christian, but we all know people like this. So what do we mean when we say the word Christian? And so the best place to turn is the Bible, right? But there's an issue. And that is, the Bible doesn't use the term Christian very much. It's in there, but it's not in there a whole lot. It's used three times in the New Testament. And I want to show you the usage of how people used it and defined it. There's not a really clear definition to what it was. And the people that used it are very interesting as well. And so in the Acts of the Apostle, which is a book of a Bible that was written by Dr. Luke. He wrote the Gospel of Luke, and he wrote the book of Acts. And it really tells the story of the early church, the story after Jesus had gone on to be with the Father. Acts tells the story of the church. And many of you know that there were lots of persecution that fell upon the early church. It started in Jerusalem. But there in Jerusalem, there was lots of persecution. Stephen, who was an apostle, was stoned to death. And so a lot of the Christians scattered. And a lot of them ended up in this place called Antioch. And Antioch was a long way away from Jerusalem. Where Antioch is like present-day Turkey. So we're talking miles and miles away. Far, far away is where Antioch was. But this group of Christians landed there. And so they begin to talk to the people there, the Jews and the Greeks who were Roman-minded, all this group, and they started talking about Jesus Christ, this Jesus that they had known. They said, "We saw this man and he rose from the dead. We saw it. And we know other people that saw it too." And what happened was a Jesus movement started in Antioch, and it grew and it grew and it grew. And word gets back to Jerusalem, to Peter and all those guys, that this thing is happening in Antioch. And so they say to this guy named Barnabas, and that's a name you might have heard from in the New Testament too, but they say to Barnabas, "You got to go to Antioch. We're sending you on a trip. And you got to see what's going on there. Go see if this is real." And so he gets there and he founds this movement, these believers in Jesus, these followers of Jesus. And it's just exploding and growing. And so I want to show you where the verse is. It's in Acts 11. It says, "Then Barnabas," and this is about the time that Paul was converted too. His name was still Saul, but he goes down to check out Paul and see if that's real. He goes down to Tarsus to look for Saul, and when he found him, he brought him to Antioch. And for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church and taught great numbers of people. The disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. That's what it said. They go down, but notice what it says. The disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. And so sometimes we can refer to the 12 men that Jesus poured into as the disciples. Those were the apostles. You know, disciples were these followers of Jesus. In the early church, they referred to themselves as followers of Jesus or the way or disciples. They did not call themselves Christians. And when they were called Christians, it came from people outside of the church. They called them Christians. And there's some indication that it wasn't even a term of endearment. So like those Christians. Those Christians. And how we know that from history is this guy named Tacitus. How many of y'all have heard Tacitus? If you ever took ancient history, you read about Tacitus or read something from Tacitus. Tacitus was this guy. He was born, I think, in about 64 AD, but he wrote a lot about four emperors in particular. And one of those emperors was Nero. Y'all have heard of Nero, right? Well, when Nero had a very interesting idea. He wanted to rebuild the city of Rome. And so to do that, he burned the city down. Right? You've heard that story. And of course, the people, they weren't happy about that because it was their businesses and there was homes that got burned down. And so what Nero did was he blamed a group of people. And who did he blame? He blamed the Christians. Now, you know about that. You know how you know about that? You know about that because of Tacitus and the stuff that he wrote. And so here's a quote from Tacitus. Now watch this. He said, from the ancient historian Tacitus, he said, "Consequently, to get rid of the report, Nero fastened the guilt and inflicted the most exquisite tortures on a class hated for their abominations called Christians by the populace." Wasn't the church calling themselves Christians? It was the populace, the people. They were calling them Christians, and in a lot of cases, it wasn't a fond term. Those Christians. And so, they didn't call themselves Christians. What did the first believers, the first follower of Jesus, how did they refer to themselves? And can we get a definition of what that is, because there's really no clear definition of what a Christian is, and we can see it continue today. There's not a real clear definition. It can be a way that somebody votes to people who raise vegetables. There's all sorts of definitions about Christian. But is there a term that we can have definition to and meaning? A term that meant something to them in the early church, and there is. And it, in some ways, is a scary term for us because we know what it means and we know what it entails. And that word is disciple. Is disciple. And the definition for disciple is, in Greek, is the same that it is in English. It's someone who is a close follower, who studies and apprentices himself to a certain person, and they're trying to learn all about it. So you can be a disciple of the guitar, or a disciple of a certain kind of art, or a disciple. But in the Christian terms, in the church terms, a disciple has a very, very clear and specific way that it's talked about. And if you read the New Testament over and over and over and over again, you will see the early church refer to themselves not as Christian, but as disciples. As disciples. So what does that mean for you? And I want to show you one verse where we see it clearly defined what a disciple is. And I want to tell you, if we did this as a church, I'm telling you right now, many wars, if we had done this for the 2,000 years of Christianity, many would have fought. Definitely, the Civil War would have not been fought because slavery would have been dealt with a long time ago. The Civil Rights Movement would not have happened because there wouldn't have been any reason for it. If we just did this one thing, the world would be a very, very different place. But the problem is we want to call ourselves Christians and then decide what that term means and get upset if somebody does it differently. Us, we want to draw a little circle and be inside our little circle and say how everybody else is wrong outside of our circle, when it's very clearly, if we're going to follow Jesus, what we do. And it's much, much harder than all of the Pharisaical and crazy stuff that groups professing to be Christians are called. So what is it? And I want to look at the Gospel of John. And you know, this is a very familiar passage. You know, you've heard it all your life, but I want to look at it under this context. What are they saying and defining about what a disciple is? Jesus is getting the very end of his life and ministry here on earth. It's the first Passion Week. And he knows that he is going to be killed. He knows that the cross is before him. And so in that last Passover, which we now call the Lord's Supper or Communion, but the last Passover that he was going to have with those that were closest to him, these people that had been with him throughout and followed him and called themselves disciples and apostles, these folks, he said, I got to get the main thing. He's taught many things. I got to get this main thing across to them. And so at this, he says this, "My children, I will be with you only a little longer." In other words, lean in, okay? I'm just going to be here a little while longer. Listen. "You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I am going, you cannot come." Peter's hand goes up. Peter's consumed, like, "Where are you going, Lord? Where are you going?" And he said, I want to go. If you go, we're going. I'm going with you. Wait. Is Andrew going? Because if Andrew's going, I'm going too, Lord. I mean, I will follow you. Am I the only one we left? Where are you going, Lord? And so Jesus just continues. He says, a new command. Okay? A new command I give you. And it ends up, it's not really even new in that sense, because he said it before. And he's echoed the Old Testament with it before. And so he says, this is it. I'm all that I've done, all that I think, it boils down to this. This new command that I give you, love one another. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. That's what I want you to do. That's what I want you to go out and do. Love one another. And looks over, he says, Matthew, remember when we met you, what you were doing? Matthew's like, well, yeah, it's tax collector. Tax collectors in the Jewish circles were traitors. And he says, Peter, do you remember the day that we met Matthew, what you thought? He said, yeah, I didn't want to be around with that guy. I hated that guy. He said, yeah. Do you remember what we did? John, remember what we did when we met Matthew? Yeah, I do. You know, my mama told me not to hang around with people like that. And you took us to Matthew's house and there was a party with all the people were like that. He said, yeah. And Matthew, do you remember what I did then? I didn't say you're excluded because you've had this profession and you've been a traitor and all of that. I said, you're one of my men and I loved you. I loved you, Matthew. And that is the way that I want you to love others. That's the way I want you to treat one another. I want you to love in those ways. Turned to another one and said, do you remember the day? And some of y'all don't know this story, you know, the day we met Nathaniel. Some of y'all don't know this story. But you know, the day I met you, your brother, Andrew, had brought you to meet me. And you were standing under the tree. And guys, not many people know this story. But do you know what you said to me? And he bowed his head and said, well, yeah. He said, nothing good comes out of Nazareth. What good can come out of Nazareth? He said, you know, you dissed my whole town. You dissed my whole people. But you know what I did? I loved you. I loved you. And I loved you into our circle, and I have shown you love. As I love, I want you to love one another. That is what I want you to do. This is the great command. If you will do this, if you will get this right, if you will show this kind of love, you will be on the right path. You'll be following. And then he says one more thing. He says this. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you, what? Love one another. How can we define disciples? If you love and love like Jesus, if you do this, you are His disciples. And as I said, if we could just get this one thing right, what a difference it would make in the world. And Andrew, we love you. And we love babies because, listen, if we don't have those crying babies, if we don't have those crying babies in our church, friends, we're not going to be a church much longer. I want a chorus of crying and babies in here. Amen? That's what I want. So y'all don't sweat it. Don't bother me. Because that's how you show love. You know, I get a lot of things wrong, but I can get that right. I can show love in that way. So Jesus has poured out His life. He's poured out His heart. He has talked about this new commandment. And now comes one of my favorite lines in the Bible. Because to me, it's just so funny. You know, he sits there, he pours this all out. And it's this epic moment in Christ's life. And he turns around. And Peter's got his hand up. He says, Yeah, Peter, what you got? He says, Lord, where are you going? Where are you going? He says, Jesus, like, Peter, did you just miss everything I said? Oh, yeah, that love stuff, it's awesome. But, you know, I want to know where it is you're going. Because that's where I want to go. Don't you know, Lord, I will follow you anywhere. I will do what you do. Lord, I will die for you. And Jesus says, Peter, in just a few hours, a middle school girl is going to intimidate you into denying you know me. Okay? Look, I don't want you to die for me. I want you to love. I want you to love like me. That's what I want you to do, Peter. I want y'all to love. And I want you to pass that on to the church so that if we could love like that, that's what we're called to do and be among one another. So the people look at them and say, look how they love one another. I want to be like that. See that? You know, I don't know much about them, but I watch the way that that husband treats his wife. And I would hope that my daughter would marry somebody like that. If that's what being one of them is like, that's what I want to be. And, you know, if I look over there and I see this woman and how she treats her husband and the way she loves him. And that's what... That's what I want for my son. And people might say, I don't know much about what they do, but I would tell you something. They are the most honest people I've ever known. They tell you when you're wrong. They are always on time. They are the most honest and hardworking people I know, and I would hire every one of them that I could because they're such good people. They're such good people. You know, people would say, you know, just the way that they are in their neighborhood, in their community, they go down on a Sunday afternoon, on the last day of, believe it or not, summer before school starts back, and they go out and they love on people, and they let them know that there's hope. Because if there's not hope, there's not much. And this hope that we have, that the world can be different because of the love of Christ, and it's not going to be. Christians have done all sorts of things in the name of Christ. We are called to be His disciples and love like Christ. Do you see the difference? You know, Christians in the name of Christ have done, you know, wars and all sorts of separations of people from people. You know, most likely because of Christians, we will separate this denomination. I'm not trying to be forecasting, but I'm just saying, if we showed love, how we love one another, how we treat one another, that's what I want to see. And even if we were to divide, if people would look and say, like, they had irreconcilable differences, but see how they treated each other with love and not like putting each other down on social media and in public. That's what we're called to be. And I want to challenge you to that kind of love. And it's hard to think of, but maybe just for the next week, can we all agree that we'd try to love like that, to love our family, to love our friends, our co-workers, to love them as Jesus loved us, to ask that question? We'll just take it a week at a time. We'll do it this week, and you see how you do. Now, I know some of you live and work with idiots. I get it. But this is different. This is different. You can be patient, but you can be loving and kind and show them the love of Jesus. And little bit by little bit, we can make a difference. We can bring the hope and healing of Christ to our community. I want to give you a chance to make that kind of commitment this morning. Band's going to do a song I believe everybody in here probably knows. It's called I Have Decided to Follow Jesus. You know, and that's the question. You know, I'm not going to say let's stop using the word Christian, but I am much more interested in us being followers of Jesus, of being His disciples, than whatever definition that term might be. Can we look like that? And if you're willing to say it, look, I want to try. You know, I'm getting it a little bit by a little bit. I want to invite you to come to the altar and just say a prayer. If you need me to pray for you, you know, call me over, but we'll be here for you. But to make that commitment to step and say, yeah, I get that. I don't want to just be a Christian anymore, whatever that means. I want to be a disciple. I want to be one who loves others the way that He loved us. And so as the team comes and sings, let us have a time at the altar.
Decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back.
He's before me,
the world behind me, the cross before me, the world behind me, the cross before me, the world behind me, no turning back, no turning back. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. No turning back. The cross before me, the world behind me. The cross before me, the world behind me. The cross before me, the world behind me, no turning back, 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 no turning back.
Thank you for your attentiveness this morning. I hope you've enjoyed this, having us all together in one room. We do this from time to time. If you're visiting with us, I hope you'll come back. You know, we're not perfect, and we're not even that eloquent, but we try to love Jesus. We really are endeavoring to try to love Jesus, and we don't always get it right, but sometimes we do. Sometimes we do, and so maybe you can come and help us. We're about to leave and go down and have a great meal together. Don't forget, if you can, grab a t-shirt, come down and love on people and be with us this afternoon down at the pavilion. But we're going to do one more thing because we like to have fun with each other. So I'm going to hobble back up there and we're going to do Victory in Jesus to close out the service, and then we'll be dismissed and go on and eat together. So let me see if I can climb up there and not injure myself again.